Thanks for clicking on our podcast. This is John Fraser, and with my partner in wine down in the Cape, Michael Olivier, each week we taste the very best that the Cape has to offer in wines or spirits, whatever tickles our fancy, and hopefully it'll tickle yours as well. Well, for the second week in a row on Divine Intervention, we are going to try a white. Last week we tried a delicious Cruet Constantia blend of Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. Today we are moving on to Chardonnay, one of those grapes that was very fashionable, maybe a bit less fashionable, but certainly seems to be on the up and up, and hopefully this will be really wonderful and we'll be able to tell people to drink it. Before I go into detail on the wine, it's time to cross to Michael Olivier, our food and wine expert in Cape Town, who will be talking us through this. Good evening, Michael. How are you?
John, all good, thank you. Looking forward to this tasting.
Excellent. Well, you've obviously done some homework, so you know what it's like. And I know you wouldn't recommend something shoddy to a panel which is as distinguished as what this one is. George Mancharoff from Tersos, great to have you back again.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Jeremy Sampson from somewhere or other, great to see you again.
John, looking forward to it.
And Debbie van Flymen from Wine Cellar, great to have you back again.
Thank you.
A Cape Wine Master.
Indeed.
How long did that take?
The Cape Wine Master studies themselves a full 5 years, but it's a starting point. It's not an end goal.
Well, drinking all that wine over 5 years, you are a martyr for punishment.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, having introduced the guests, it's time to introduce the wine. It's quite an old white wine, given that we tend to drink our white wines a year or less after they've been put in the bottle. This is a Dorrance 2012 Chardonnay. Michael Olivier, have I pronounced Dorrance right?
Dorrance, absolutely. Dorrance is the old French name for the man that is now Durand, D-U-R-A-N-D. And Christophe Durand, who is the maker of this wine, was born in Normandy from a Calvados family, interestingly enough. And he's been in Cape Town now for about 20 years.
Was he the apple of their eye?
Absolutely. And he started supplying French oak barrels to the wine industry from a small family cooperage in France. And he now provides some really serious Cape winemaking names with their barrels. And obviously very involved in winemaking. And it was only a matter of time, really, before he started making his own wine. Now, this Chardonnay, it's called Cuvée Anis, which Anis is his daughter. It's a 2012. It's a wonderful step up from the previous vintage. He uses grapes from both Elgin and Franschhoek. And the thing with his knowledge of the oak, he's able to integrate the oak perfectly into all the sort of wonderful levels of flavor that one finds in the Chardonnay. It's a beautiful sort of green, amber, gold color in the glass. And then it's got a lovely nose, which is sort of a bit like sort of cold cream and buttered popcorn. And then the flavors, obviously this wonderful, wonderful acidity and sort of melon and lemon peel and sort of whiffs of white flowers all around it. And this lovely, long, minerally aftertaste and sort of quite fresh and steely. I think this is a delicious wine. I really do.
Well, Mike, as you know, I lived in Europe for a long time before I came back to South Africa. And I visited Burgundy a couple of times. And of course, Chardonnay is a grape that you do find in that part of the world. This, for me, is on a par with some of the finest Burgundy wines I've tried. It's really, really, really nice. It's elegant, it's rich, it's complex. And I think it's nice to know that we in South Africa can make something, not just in the world of bubblies or reds or whites, but it in comparison to something that you're going to find elsewhere in the world that is just as good, if not better. I love this, I'm very impressed by it. And I'm very proud that we have a South African winemaker who can put out stuff like this. But what do I know? Debbie?
I think this is an absolutely massive step up in quality from the previous vintage. I see the labelling has changed as well. but I think it's incredibly judiciously handled when it comes to the wood. So it has all that lovely, ripe South African fruit character that we expect in a Chardonnay, and yet it's balanced, and it sort of unravels in the mouth. I get a lot of white citrus blossom character and fleshy pears on the palate, and I love the clean finish on this wine. It really leaves me mouth-watering, wanting to have another sip.
Can't argue with any of that. George?
Oh, it's a very classy wine. It is a glorious wine. I love it. It's very well balanced. It is beautiful.
And of course, you've travelled to many countries, drunk wines in many of them. Of course, not in Saudi Arabia, because that would be naughty. But where you've been living recently. But this is you know, sometimes in South Africa we have these phrases like export quality, because we're almost ashamed of what we're doing. We think it's got to be something special for the rest of the world to like.
We should be proud of this.
This is magnificent.
It just takes it. It's a different level from wines I would normally buy, and I wish I knew where to buy it.
I'm sure Michael has a few contacts in the wine trade, and for several thousand rand a bottle, I'll be the middleman.
It's beautiful wine. Beautiful wine. Love it.
Jeremy Sampson, care to differ, or are you quite enjoying this?
Who would I be to differ with you, John? But again, I'm sharing
differ with Debbie. She's only a Cape wine.
But I'm sharing my ignorance. I've never heard of Dorance before, if I was blind tasting this, and if you asked me if this was from France or somewhere, I think I'd think it was French. And looking at the label and looking at the branding, it's very classic, it's very downplayed, it's very elegant and very classic, with all the sort of things I relate to when you have a really classy Chardonnay. I'm not one for some of these modern labels which are being churned out at the moment. The competition that was had a couple of weeks ago, where a lot of those designs, I think, will be forgotten probably within months, not even a year. And this is the sort of label that would appeal to most people. You'd be proud to have it on your table. And I think a lot of people would say, oh, is this from France? It's that good.
Well, obviously, on a podcast, it's difficult to discuss a label. But I know if people go onto your website, you're less lazy than me. So you may well feature a picture of the bottle. Am I right in thinking this label resembles a little bit the labels you might find on a bottle of Burgundy, even if the bottle itself may not be quite the same shape?
Absolutely.
This wine was so well thought of internationally that many of your listeners may not know that this was actually served at the wedding of Prince Albert II and Princess Charlene of Monaco recently. Well, a year or two ago. This was one of the wines that was one of the South African wines that was chosen to be served. I think it is a very proudly South African example of what we can do.
Well, bloody post office. If my invitation had arrived in time, I would know this wine already. What can one say? Michael Olivier, just going back to one of the themes that we tend to return to in each of these podcasts, food and wine, because that is a marriage quite often made in heaven. What heavenly grub would you put alongside this heavenly wine?
Well, you certainly need, I mean, again, we were talking about a buttery roast chicken. I think that would be absolutely brilliant. And if for us, I mean, we get such wonderful fresh fish down here. And just cooking a piece of fish really simply in a pan with a little bit of lemon, a little bit of parsley, some nice desert salt, and a grind of black pepper would be just wonderful with a wine like this. And maybe some new potatoes with a bit of mint. But it'll do all the seafood stuff. It'll do veal, it'll do pork very well. You know, nice pork fillet, braised with a bit of calvados and apple slices, maybe. A nod to Christophe's Normandy heritage. That's the sort of things that I would put with a wine like this.
I know a very good recipe for pork in calvados and cider, which happens to be on Michael Olivier's website. And I actually arranged for a very good friend to bring me a bottle of calvados, which is probably too good to cook with, but a little slurp into that casserole I know will make it very, very impressive. Michael, I would, as always, as you know, my favourite food group is cheese. I think this would go very nicely with the cheese platter.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But obviously I'd have to get the platter guide to find which cheese to have with it. Debbie?
I really like the body of this wine. Without it being heavy or weighty, it actually has a really nice body on the mid palate. I'm going to put my neck out there and say even this would be delicious with duck. I'd like to see it maybe served with something in that sort of vein, or even a risotto, a vegetarian risotto, a mushroom risotto would be lovely with this, I think.
Well, if you put a bit of bacon in, I'm sure it would be. George?
I think that this wine needs food which doesn't have dominant flavors. I think that this wine, if I had to order a dish now, it would be a Parma ham and melon as a starter, and I think it will be absolutely marriage made in heaven.
That's actually a very good idea. And George, there is a restaurant I go to quite often which does have Parma ham and melon. It's an Italian restaurant, and quite often I order a Constantia Sauvignon Blanc to go with it, and it doesn't go with it. It's amazing. That's one of the few really strong food clashes I have come across in my many years of overindulgence. I think you're right. I think this would go quite well. Yes. But what do I know? Jeremy, any gastronomic thoughts?
I think my first thought is often we say when we're drinking a wine, it needs food. And I'm not convinced this does need food. As you say, it's a brilliant accompaniment with things, I'm sure. But even on its own, I'm thoroughly enjoying it. But I just want to give you one insight of watching, I think it was a bit of MasterChef in the last week, where I saw a well-known chef in London preparing his fish. And I learned something for the first time that he said, put the oil on the fish, not in the pan. So you put the oil on the fish, and then you put the fish in the pan. He said, if you put the oil in the pan first, there's a danger of burning the oil, and that will burn the food, which was an insight I have to say I'd never come across before.
Well, I have a few culinary tricks. Put the ketchup on the table before you serve the food, because then you don't have to go get up and get it from the cupboard. Michael Olivier, just going back to you, Burgundy wines, French wines, Spanish wines, we've indulged in a few Italian wines, indeed, a few wines from around the world. What's your current perception, certainly among the more affluent South Africans? Is there an appetite to compare and contrast? Is this something that's growing? Because, as you'll know, some of the supermarkets now have quite a range of non-South African wines. Debbie, I know, will be happy to sell people stuff from anywhere in the world as long as there's a good commission. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the people who are trying the imported wines are the people who are really interested in wine. You know, a lot of people drink wine simply because, well, we drink wine for dinner. So go into the supermarket and let's buy something to go with tonight's chicken kind of thing. So I think you have to be very wine conscious first before you're looking at a local Pinot Gris, for argument's sake, and then seeing an Italian one on the shelf and thinking, well, let's buy a bottle of that and try the two. I think there is a certain amount of experimentation, but I think it's very small.
And of course, people need to know that quite often there are a vast array of wines produced in any particular region of the world. For instance, I've seen some Châteauneuf du Pape on sale in one of our supermarkets. I'm not sure it would be quite as good as some of the Châteauneuf du Pape I've had in that particular part of France. So, yes, you can get imported wine, just as export quality is not necessarily something that I have a great deal of affection for. In the same way, imported stuff is not necessarily any better than anything we produce ourselves.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
George, final thoughts on that?
On export and import?
On the quality of imported wine into a country and just comparing, benchmarking, all those good things.
I have seen containers with wine sitting in a very sunny, very hot part of the world and waiting to be offloaded. And when you keep this kind of quality wine for a few days in the sun at 50, 60 degrees, it's no longer a good idea. So I'm always very suspicious, depending on which part of the world I'm in, taking an imported wine.
Jeremy, does that maybe explain why so many people, myself included, feel that South African wine always tastes better when you're in the Cape?
Well, John, I've heard one of the reasons is that it gets brought up to Johannesburg especially during the summer months, in unrefrigerated trucks, where the temperature might get up to 50 or 60 degrees, and whilst that might only be for a day, 2 days. And like you, I've often said, drinking in the Western Cape is so much more pleasurable. Now, you know, if I talk of a brand, I talk of the total experience, but it does taste better down there. And I can only think this is one of the issues. I think the other thing to say is, though, that sometimes do we know what we're drinking? Now, I saw the other day that 20% of all wines sold in the UK are not what they're meant to be. So sometimes when you're drinking a good bottle of wine, is it the real thing? And you only get to know that if you buy from the cellar door, I guess.
Debbie, you...
Or from a reputable salesperson.
Ta-da!
Okay. Do your sales pitch. You've got 3 seconds.
I'm going to disagree slightly, actually, and say that while Michael is correct, and while we know that approximately 95% of the wine purchases made worldwide are designed for consumption within the first 24 hours, we do also know there are people who don't even wait until they've crossed the car park before they open their purchases.
Particularly but if it's in a brown paper bag.
100%. That notwithstanding, the amazing thing is that there is definitely a market in South Africa for comparing and contrasting wines from different origins, whether that's local or international. We see a trend and bookings at tastings that we hold regularly where people are very curious to see how South African wines compare stylistically to international wines. And in fact, because South African wines are often far more economical purchases, and the exchange rate certainly hasn't been favorable in the last few years, people are often choosing to go with the South African wines, but have at least the knowledge on their palates. It's about what people enjoy in their glasses, as opposed to anybody else's scores or definitions of a wine. So I do see that more and more people are looking at international wines. And I must say that having the opportunity regularly to taste the same wines, both in the Cape and here on the Highveld, on average, my scores are approximately half a point higher in Gauteng. And we've been trying to figure out what that's all about for a few years. And I'll say that some of it might be based on altitude and air pressure. But I'm looking very consistently over a history of a number of years now of tasting in both the Cape and here in Gauteng.
Well, going back to what you were saying, there are some things I don't like in my glass. One of them is air. Michael Olivier, a final thought from you on whether wine travels well, I suppose. That was the theme of our recent discussion.
Yeah, look, I think I really don't have any strong feelings about whether it travels well or not, but I think George is so right in saying that the controlling the temperature during the time of travel and getting it off the ship into some controlled temperature is going to make a huge difference.
Excellent. Well, unfortunately, once again, we have drunk ourselves into semi-oblivion, so it's time to bid all our millions of podcast listeners a very pleasant evening. If you can, try and source some of these wines and buy one, come back to the podcast and drink it with us. Why not? Down to the Cape for the final time this evening. Thank you very much indeed, Michael Olivier. You have introduced me to, I think, what is probably in my top 5 ever South African white wines. It's a stunner.
I'm so happy. Well, Christoph will be thrilled.
Excellent. He can demonstrate his thrilledness by sending us a case or two. I wouldn't complain. I might even pay trade prices for it. Debbie, thanks
lovely.
To you.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing this with us.
George?
Oh, great wine. I would like to export 2 bottles, which is within my limit, to take in my suitcase. And it will be well controlled.
I doubt. Yeah, well, better put it in the hold, otherwise they'll have disappeared before the end of the flight. And last, certainly not least, Jeremy Sampson. Thanks for joining us again.
John, proudly South African, an absolute stunner. Really brilliant.
I'm John Fraser. That was Proudly South African Divine Intervention.